Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I would like to thank the organizers for an invitation and an opportunity to deliver my thoughts on this panel focused on transmission roads and politics. But let me start from saying that any examination of the relationship between politics and the routes by which Russian gas is conveyed to Europe can be made to concentrate on the search for and discussion of the intentions that explain why new pipelines continue to be built in some places, in some locations, but not in others. On the one hand, it is very easy to become rapidly submerged in a sea of technical details, and on the other, to become limited to slogans and generalities. In my contribution, which will only be expression of my own views, and I don't know to what extent it will reflect the thinking of the government, I was asked to focus on political ramifications of laying the pipelines that will serve to transport Russian gas to Europe. I would like to take this opportunity to propose an approach that differs from the one that has been dominated discussions on this issue for last years. Of course, I'm going to avoid also the above mentioned pitfalls. But my main thesis is that talking about particular location of transmission routes, we should less focus on geography, but more on how they contribute to the mutual confidence building. But let me begin by acknowledging the fact that while developed world is grieving over energy resources rising costs, whose level is already treating the entire world economy, this situation is a blessing for Russia. It is worth stressing that from the point of view of the countries that are gradually integrating within the European Union, the fact that Russia has regained its feet, overcome an economic crisis, and is striving to bridge the civilization gap that separates it from the world's most advanced nations is a very positive one. These developments open new prospects for Russia. It also has to be said that everywhere in Europe, such an evolution is greeted with satisfaction, as everyone wants a neighbor that is prosperous. The fact that Russia has energy resources which the European Union needs in ever-increasing quantities creates additional opportunities in this context. Russia can sell its energy resources, especially its gas, almost solely to the European Union, which thanks to this can increase the level of its energy security, but only to the extent that it is treated as an integral whole. If the European Union does not succeed in working out a common policy towards all its energy suppliers, and if these suppliers not only look with disfavor on the progress of European integration in the sphere of energy security, but sometimes also attempt to hamper this process, the obvious consequence would be a rise of uncertainty and a deficit of mutual trust. This leads us to the question of whether such an outcome lies in the long-term interest of energy suppliers. Will the European Union, grappling with a sense of insecurity in the sphere of energy and embarking on uncoordinated, nervous and exaggerated steps, such as are, after all, the consequences of insecurity, be a better partner for the energy suppliers than a union whose energy security is guaranteed? The situation applies from Russia to the European Union. A dependence between an exclusive importer and its principal supplier should form a stable foundation for the growth of a good relations based on mutual benefits, credibility and confidence. not only in energy matters, but also in political sphere. Several conditions need to be met to make this possible, however, and I would like to mention some. Russia needs to stop looking at the European Union through 19th century spectacles, as if the EU were an uncanny alliance of big powers with a swarm of insignificant players. The phenomenon of integration consists in exchange of sovereignty, and this means that this swarm of insignificant players, taken as a whole, has a considerable share in the sovereignty of big European powers, and in a proportional measure, the same European powers are shareholders in the sovereignty of the Union's smaller members. If we really wish Russia to be perceived as a trustworthy partner by all EU members, a harmonization in levels of confidence towards Russia as a reliable supplier of energy resources needs to take place. This will most certainly not be accomplished by Russia's attempt to provide varying degrees of energy security to individual EU members, and by its privileged treatment of some members at the cost of others. Should this type of thinking persist, Russia will fail in convincing the entire EU of its good intentions and in building its credibility as an honest supplier. The EU will have to counter its deficit of confidence with legal and institutional measures. It is difficult to talk of confidence building in a situation where, on the one hand, the Russian authorities are precluding any possibility of the EU companies to invest in exploitation of energy or Russian energy deposit, or in the infrastructure for the transportation and distribution, and where, on the other hand, those who decided to take the risk a decade ago, urged on by incentives offered by Russia then, today faced harassment tactics involving the whole panoply of measures available to state administration, not excluding the secret services. The obvious aim of such tactics is not to throw Western European companies out of Russia, but to change rules in the middle of the game. How frequent, under what circumstances, in which directions the rules may be changed in the future? Nobody knows. Indeed, without answering to these questions, the climate would not be very encouraging to take a risk and get involved oneself in energy business in Russia and with Russia. All of this is taking place in a situation where Russia is more and more clearly entering a period of energy deficit. We have been hearing arguments about the energy deficit and how it may influence the situation in the future. At the same time, Gazprom is investing primarily in the foreign asset and only minimally in the modernization of old deposit and the startup of the new ones. To this, one should add that critical state of transmission infrastructure and the progressing diversification of export from Central Asia countries. It is precisely for this reason that it is important for Russia to create legal and political conditions favoring influx on a foreign investment. Among other things, foreign capital and technology could help prevent the collapse of gas production in Russia. It does not seem likely that the above-mentioned conditions would be made without Russia's adoption the majority of the stipulations contained in the sort of code of conduct formulated in Energy Charter and the Transit Protocol, even if they were to be contained in other binding documents. A new basic framework agreement for EU and Russia relations is a good opportunity for both parties. I'm personally very skeptical about the chances for the acceptance of the document in which the by all the EU member countries, if its role, I mean this document, were to be limited to managing the situation of lack of mutual confidence in the sphere of energy security. The building of Russian credibility as a long-term supplier of energy resources is also not served by its repeated attempts to present plans to build gas pipelines leading to the Far East, toward China and Japan, as an alternative to building pipelines leading towards Europe. This is accompanied by background suggestion that if the European Union demands go too far, Russia will turn its back on it and will begin exporting gas to China. Russia's largest gas deposits are close to Europe, however. In addition, the Chinese market is not in a position to become an alternative for the EU market. The problem with selling gas to China also has to do with the fact that the price Beijing is offering is below the level that makes production and supply at all feasible. Of course, I'm not mentioning right now the Sakhalin fields, but the main Russian deposit. In addition, China has diversified its sources of gas sufficiently to make it less interested in purchasing Russian gas than Russia is in diversifying its export routes. In addition, China's northern regions are among its most backward. Who there would be in need of gas in the quantities the Russians have to sell? If one wants to be taken seriously, one has to use serious arguments. One of the arguments being used to justify the calls for the new gas pipelines from Russia to the EU, either under the Baltic Sea or under the Black Sea, is that such an itinerary would contribute to strength of EU-Russian relations and to building the mutual trust and to Europe's energy security, as it will allow transit countries to be bypassed. Let me turn your attention to the fact that it is very difficult to count on increase in mutual confidence when questioning the credibility of others is a principal driving force behind one's own action. This is indeed a very particular way of building confidence. I'm not going to devote any more attention here to the arguments about the reduction of transportation costs, as in the light of the latest reports on the rising expenses related to the above-mentioned project, such arguments can no longer be treated seriously. In any case, I think that the realization of this extremely costly project will end in fiasco. Expensive Russian gas, its cost will have to be shouldered by European consumers, after all, will incline Europeans to search for other solutions and other suppliers. In this manner, Russian may just strangle the goose that lays the golden egg. Nor is the building of mutual confidence served by turning a blind eye to attempts to export practices in which methods and ties belonging to the spheres of politics, business and crime intertwine. Such practices may not be seen as offensive in societies struggling with the post-Soviet heritage, but restoring to them in relations with entities from the European Union will always be seen as treating. The resulting anxiety would not be connected with the rising crime, but with the spread in business of bad practices that infringe the principles of honest competition. The European Union and Russia together should combat such practices with determination and should root them out, as they do not serve healthy and fruitful cooperation between the two states. And my last point is the following. Security of the EU is an indivisible concept. The level of security of the community as a whole cannot be separated from the security of any single member state. So any project that is perceived by a member state as affecting its security interest loses its European appeal by nature. Putting something on the list of European projects is not the end of the story, but the beginning of export justification. Thank you very much for your attention.